Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning and welcome to Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor.
Chris McGregor.
And we have a very special guest in studio today, Chris. Welcome to KVSS to Mr. George Weigel. He is, of course, a New York Times bestseller, distinguished senior fellow at Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center, a Catholic theologian, one of America's most prominent public intellectuals, and the author of 15 books, including Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II. George's column, The Catholic Difference, is nationally syndicated. He also serves as Vatican analyst for NBC News and as a Newsweek contributor. And George joins us live in studio today to talk about his latest book, Against the Grain, Christianity and Democracy, War and Peace. George, pleasure to have you with us.
Nice to be back in Omaha. Thank you.
George, it is just an honor to have you with us, especially at a time when Washington needs your presence. I mean, to be here in Omaha is great, but from what everything we hear, it's just all going to, you know where, in a basket. Anxiety levels, the culture is screaming. What's your perception of what's happening in America right now?
Well, insofar as you're talking, Chris, about this kind of political gridlock we find ourselves in,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a reflection of a higher level of nastiness mm-hmm. or more scoundrels or whatnot. The Congress of the United States has always been full of scoundrels and edgy people and whatnot. This is the political manifestation of what some of us have called for the better part of 25 years now, the American culture war. Mm-hmm. Two very different ideas of thinking about this country, thinking about the human person, thinking about the human condition. And that's what's producing the gridlock. The good news from the point of view of a vibrant Catholic social witness is that radical secularism has not won the day. Mm-hmm. Although were Senator Obama to be elected in November, it would get a new burst of very high energy, particularly in terms of Supreme Court appointments. But in the main, it hasn't won the argument the way it has in Europe. Those parts of America that remain traditional in their moral culture are the parts of America that have children. Mm-hmm. So if demography is destiny, the radical secularist project in the United States is running out of time. But it can do a lot of damage between now and then. And that view of how things are and ought to be, contrasted with classical biblical view of how things are and ought to be, that's at the root of a lot of this logjam and gridlock.
Mm-hmm. I think what you've done with Against the Grain is truly a gift to the Catholic Church in America, and especially to those lay faithful who were never catechized in Catholic social doctrine. I think you said in the book that in the U.S., the Catholic social doctrine is Catholicism's best kept secret. But it's essential to the life of democracy in helping to form those leaders who will make that democracy function to its best degree.
Well, this was a theme that the late Pope John Paul II emphasized very, very strongly during the last 15 years of his pontificate, after the collapse of communism. He immediately intuited, indeed, I think he intuited this before the collapse of communism, but in any event, it came to the fore afterwards, this idea that democracy is not a machine that can run by itself. Mm-hmm. In political science terms today, you often hear people talk about procedural democracy. Republic of procedures. The only thing we agree on are the procedures by which we disagree. Well, this is a prescription, if not for, not only for gridlock, but ultimately for what the present Pope, Benedict XVI, has long called the dictatorship of relativism. Because if there's only your truth and my truth, and nothing that either one of us recognizes as the truth, then when your truth comes into conflict with my truth, mm-hmm. either you are going to impose your power on me or I am going to impose my power on you, because we have nothing to turn to by which to settle the argument. Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of a radically secularized Western Europe today, we can see this dictatorship of relativism at work. Absent any thick public moral cultural foundation for living difference, for living pluralism, politically correct answers, quote unquote, have been imposed by the coercive power of the state, either regulatory or legal, mm-hmm. Often by courts rather than by legislatures. Roe versus Wade is perhaps the most dramatic example of the dictatorship of relativism in American society, and in American society in history, modern history. And it is perhaps another sign that we have not gone so far down the road of radical secularism in the U.S., that there's still a fierce argument about Roe versus Wade 35 years after the court handed it down in January 1973. So that's part of what I try to explore in this book, how the church's thinking about the good society, emerging out of the church's thinking about the goods of the human person, gives us a thoughtful, rational way to engage some of the great issues of our time.
What you present to us isn't just an ideology or one arm or one side of the church. What you provided for us has its basis in the actual teachings of pontiffs over, you know, several decades, even longer than that. And yet I am still stunned that, having received a Catholic education, a theological background in the early 90s, I never heard of many of the documents that you cited. And yet that's the foundations of the thought of the Catholic Church. Where did that end up sinking into a black hole for so many people in their education?
If you haven't heard about it, maybe the next time they come to you for an alumna contribution, you should send them a note and
say,
what's going on here? The social doctrine of the Church begins to emerge in a formal way in 1891 with Leo XIII's encyclical Rerum Novarum on the condition of labor in the modern world. Mm-hmm. The run-up to this was 50 or 60 years of thinking in Britain, in Germany, in France, and in the United States about how the church's thinking about society was going to come to grips with the new realities of the 19th century: urbanization, mass education, industrialization, the breakdown of traditional orders of society, new human formations, mm-hmm. corporations, industries, mm-hmm. guilds giving way to unions, et cetera, et cetera. What was the church going to say about all this? 1891, Leo XIII's Rerum Novarum reflects, as I say, 40 to 50 years of thought and argument within the church, primarily in Europe, but also here in the United States, on the church coming to grips with economic and political modernity. Since then, this evolving body of papal teaching has been perhaps the most successful example of fruitful collaboration between the popes and theologians. This has been a real conversation, and it has produced some genuine insights, to the point where I think today we can say there are three major proposals, three really big ideas, mm-hmm. for how the human future should be constructed and on the basis of what values. One of them is the proposal of of a kind of pragmatic utilitarianism, largely carried by popular culture and certain aspects of contemporary economics. It's often manifested in what we see as the cultural side of globalization. Mm-hmm. Then there is the jihadist proposal. I mean, the radical Islam has an idea about how everybody should live. Mm-hmm. And then there is the proposal of the Catholic Church. So there's a real contest going on here in terms of defining the human future. Now, there are other ideas floating around, but those are the only three that have huge numbers of people lined up behind them, that have an institutional framework to advance them, and that are based on some serious thinking. Mm-hmm. In the case of the two defective ones, we would have to say defective thinking, but at least, yeah, you know, this is not stuff that people are making up as they go along.
Right.
And a lot of what the 22nd century is going to look like will be determined by the degree to which the idea of the human future proposed by the Catholic Church, which, by the way, is always done in a vocabulary that is not for Catholics only. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a genuinely public proposal. It's a set of ideas that anybody willing to take an argument seriously can understand. Whether that set of ideas will prove more successful in forming cultures of the 21st century than the two alternatives that are out there.
What the Catholic Church is proposing is so reasonable because it has its basis in natural law. And so much of what the foundational principles, the fourth, of course, brought forward really clearly by John Paul, but the four of them, the human rights principle, the communitarian principle, the principle of the civil society, and then also that principle that John Paul put forth of civic friendship or solidarity that so much of us hear about. Those should be, for every adult Catholic, at the very least, the foundational understanding of how we make our moral decisions, let alone how a government should be making its decisions. But many of us are not even familiar with those four principles.
I can't think of a time in the last 35 years when I have heard a sermon based on the social doctrine of the Church. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is really bizarre. I think there are probably still seminaries where you can complete the basic theology course without ever encountering this body of thought. This is not good. It's not good for the Church, but it's not good for the wider society as well. Because this is a way of thinking about the rights of persons, the responsibilities of persons, true human political community, in a way that has a kind of humanistic richness to it that is frankly lacking in the "if it itches, scratch it" approach to life, mm-hmm, or in an approach to constructing the good society that tells you convert to Islam or die. That's not a terribly humanistic approach to all of this.
No.
There's a particularly urgent need for this body of thought, this Catholic social doctrine, in the United States today. To go back to your first question, why are things the way they are? The emergence of a kind of radical secularist view in American high culture is in large part a function of the collapse of the old mainline Protestant moral hegemony, which provided a lot of the cultural glue of the United States from before there was a United States, from mm-hmm. the colonial period, until the Second World War. It became very clear in the aftermath of the Second World War, at least to people with eyes to see, that that cultural hegemony was breaking down, that a great public figure of Protestant theology like Reinhold Niebuhr in the late 1930s, 1940s, early 50s, was clearly now, in retrospect, the last of a generation. So what was going to fill the vacuum? I mean, every organized society needs some kind of moral cultural foundation. It needs some set of ideas about what is right and what is wrong, what are the attitudes appropriate to mature people, what is noble and what is base, what are we willing to die for, what are we willing to pay taxes for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do we deal with people who are other in their race, gender, sexual orientation, whatever? I mean, we need, you can't have an organized society without a publicly received set of answers to questions of difference and how you adjudicate the difference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When the Protestant mainline imploded, the vacuum was filled first by a kind of pragmatism, of whom the central figure would probably be somebody like John Dewey in the 1950s and 60s. That has now morphed into a much more dramatically, it'd be hard to be more dramatically secular than John Dewey. It turned into a much more radically skeptical postmodernism, as it's sometimes called, in which, as I said a moment ago, there's your truth and my truth, but nothing that anybody recognizes as the truth. Now, one might have thought that evangelical Protestantism, in its contemporary form, would have filled that vacuum. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, most evangelical Protestants from the 1920s till the mid-1970s had retreated from public life, lived in enclaves, and didn't have a social ethic. They're now borrowing large chunks of Catholic social doctrine, interestingly enough. You see a guy like Mike Gerson, who was President Bush's speechwriter for 6 years, is now a nationally syndicated columnist. Mike is a product of Wheaton College, the Notre Dame of evangelicaldom, and he is completely saturated in Catholic social doctrine as his way of thinking about the oughts of public life. Mm-hmm. We didn't fill the vacuum. Why didn't that happen? In part because Catholics were too busy making it in the United States. In part because once we were socially and politically secure after the early 1960s, the church went through the hurricane season of the post-Vatican II period, in which, frankly, this tradition of Catholic social doctrine was kidnapped in some quarters by the Catholic hard left, which tried to turn it into a barely disguised argument for socialism with a human face. John Paul II, I think, gave a new jump start to all of this with his 1991 encyclical, Centesimus Annus, marking the centenary of Leo XIII, Rerum Novarum, and then with Evangelium Vitae, the 1995 encyclical, on the life issues. I think in this election cycle in 2008, you're beginning finally, to see a substantial number of U.S. Catholic bishops trying to bring this social doctrine to the fore in addressing some pretty basic public policy issues. But that's why we're in the mess we're in now. I mean, the huge crater left by the evacuation of mainline, old-line, sideline Protestantism was filled by a pretty thin gruel, first with Dewey and pragmatism, and now with this postmodern business. And we need to drain that swamp and fill it with something better. I'm really mixing these metaphors terribly, like craters, swamps, whatever.
Well, John Dewey, of course, is responsible for the big mess that we have in public education today. And, you know, that type of thinking, just to see how that affected things. But also, you know, when we talk about the Catholic social doctrine, for many, it was almost hijacked. I mean, the encyclicals were being ignored, essentially, and this idea of passivity, that somehow we are always to be passive and not to engage the culture, mm-hmm. that, I think, still takes hold. You hear that coming out of the mouths of those Catholic politicians formed by that idea, when they have become now moved forward as they, the ideal is in a democracy, our leaders move forward, and their formation reflects a flawed Catholicism. I mean, when you hear it coming out of the mouths of Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi, who are in very powerful positions, and the consequences for that can be very devastating.
They have been a genuine embarrassment, but both of them have been an embarrassment for a long time. Neither one of them has a clue. Mm-hmm. In any serious way about the social doctrine of the church, manifest by the fact that they can't grasp a basic first principle of justice, namely that innocent lives being defenseless are to be protected by law. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can't get that, there's probably a lot of other stuff you're not going to get as well. The tragedy, the personal tragedy in both of these cases, is that these people have been told they're wonderful.
Yeah.
By clergy who are seriously culpable for misforming consciences. Mm-hmm. By Catholic intellectuals who have tasted the pleasures of touching power and wish to stay in touch with that. This is all very bad news, and it's kind of a huge default of responsibility. Now, as I said a moment ago, I think many bishops have now said enough. You know, we've tried to cut these people a lot of slack for a while here. But when Pelosi fundamentally misrepresents the church's teaching on Meet the Press, to the point where she has to be corrected by Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, Tom is a colleague at NBC. I'm sure we don't agree on a lot of things, but he's a serious guy, and he knows what the Catholic Church teaches on this. She didn't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, poor Tom had to straighten out Joe Biden a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
Who says that the question of the beginning of life is a deeply personal question. No, Joe, it's a matter of science. And you can go into any medical school in the United States and pick up an embryology textbook, and it'll give you the answer to this. Why this guy's pastor has not said to him,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Remember, Joe Biden came to the United States Senate 3 weeks before Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's been in the whole 35-year run here. His pastor has evidently never said to him, you are wrong on this. Mm-hmm. And you need to get straight on it. There's been a huge default here. And this shows up in the Congress because Catholics are the most highly represented religious body in the Congress of the United States, at least in absolute numbers right now. Now,
right.
Particularly acerbic Catholic friend of mine, said a couple of years ago, if you replaced every Catholic in the United States Congress with a Mormon, the church's view of the good society would have a better chance of advancing in that venue. Mm. And I'm afraid that's got a large measure of truth to it.
Yeah.
Now, there are obvious exceptions to that. The great Henry Hyde, with whom I had the honor of working for 20 years.
God rest his soul.
And many others. In fact, on both sides of the aisle. Fewer on one side of the aisle than others. But the leadership, people in the leadership level, I mean, Biden, Dodd, Senator Kennedy, Pelosi, Dick Durbin on the Senate side. These are all people who have fundamentally defaulted in their understanding of some basic justice issues that the church teaches, not because these are some weirdly Catholic thing, mm-hmm. but because these are moral truths we can know by reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get, or they refuse to get it.
Right.
So it's a sad picture.
Well, it is a sad picture because in their mind they have bought into this thing where somehow that church and state need to be separated, ideally, yes. But as you point out, and I just think one of the, every essay, of course, every essay that's written, that's my own personal feeling, that George Weigel would write is fascinating and there's a lot of depth to it. But the paradox of the disentanglement in this book, Against the Grain, I thought was fascinating because that idea that because of the idea of Christendom, for many of you out there, that dates back to Constantine, that alliance between church and state. Once that was broken apart 200 years ago, the church was then freed to do what it does best. It's to form the leaders who will run the democracies. And then they're entangled again in a way, but right now we're pushing our leaders that we have formed in the Catholic tradition have said, I can't use my Catholic brain to think. I can't use my Catholic formation, if I ever did learn it, to help make the decisions that could help the democracy.
The church's social doctrine does not ask people to sign off on what we might call core Catholic theological convictions. To grasp this vision of society, whether we're talking about the life issues or other domestic issues or war and peace issues, does not require you to believe there are two natures in the one divine person of Christ, does not require you to believe in seven sacraments, does not require you to believe in the primacy of the Bishop of Rome, the episcopal governance of the church. It doesn't even require you to believe in God. It simply asks you to think through an argument. And that's what's so offensive about the performance of Speaker Pelosi, Senator Biden, Senator Kerry 4 years ago, and the rest of this gang that can't shoot straight, is that they can't think straight. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have people claiming to be part of what is now a 1,500-year-long reflection, history of reflection on the good society, and they can't get the first moves right. Mm-hmm. This is not good. However, as I said a moment ago, balancing that mess is the fact that a large chunk of the thoughtful evangelical Protestant world sees in the social doctrine of the Catholic Church a body of thought that it can adopt without compromising what it understands to be its core theological convictions. Mm-hmm. It can move this into its theological frame of reference and learn to talk a public vocabulary. There's a great difference between the way a James Dobson addresses the public square and the way Cardinal George in Chicago addresses the public square. And Dr. Dobson is a very sophisticated version of what can come in a very much more raw form of, you know, God says the tax rate should be 26% or 24%, or the Bible says this, that, and the other thing. I think a lot of younger evangelicals, but certainly evangelical intellectuals, have long been somewhat nervous about all of this. They know that this is actually somewhat disrespectful to the Word of God, you know, to mm-hmm. turn it into a political toolkit or a public policy toolkit. And they see in the social doctrine of the Catholic Church what I call a framework for collaboration, a framework for collaborative argument, discussion, debate, rooted in the framework being constructed of some very basic principles that can be known by reason about the right ordering of society. So Catholics may not know the social doctrine of the church, but others are paying some attention, and that's a good thing.
The good news is that along with the J. Paul II priests that are coming forward who have read him, have been inspired by him, who are now rising up into pastorships at parishes and in positions within diocese to effect a change, we also have those lay people who are seeking out his writings. And I think that's why Against the Grain is so good, because it gives us in that age bracket, anywhere from the young 20-somethings all the way to us in the late 40s, early 50s, who were very inspired by this man,
how
even
kind
in our
of
teens.
You to lower my age.
Yeah, well, I'm just including us all, George. But I mean, I remember as a young teen being inspired by John Paul. And when I read what you've done with his encyclicals, and has helped give us a voice, a vocabulary. We have not had a vocabulary, a united vocabulary when it comes to Catholic social doctrine. We don't know how to respond because we're not exactly sure. We gleam it out of the catechism, yet with Against the Grain, I think you really help give us a vocabulary in which we can begin to have the discussions.
Well, thank you. That was the idea. This book brings together most of my major papers, essays on issues at the intersection of Catholic faith and public life over the past 10 or 12 years. Each one was revised into a final form. There's a little discussion about where it came from, what kind of a fuss it stirred up or didn't, and whatnot. So I hope it's more than just, you know, a little mini library of Weigel essays. I mean, I think there's something resembling a coherent argument in that. Before we leave the question of Catholic public officials, though, let's not forget some people who are perhaps not on the national radar screen yet, but who are coming. The present governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal.
Right.
Yes.
35-year-old convert from the Hinduism of his Indian parents, utterly steeped in this stuff, very, very smart politically, and can talk the talk as well as walk the walk. We've often had people who couldn't talk the talk too well and whatnot. Bobby is going to be a real force in American public life over the next 20 or 30 years. And he's formed in this tradition. That's something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I just think there are many. We have one locally, Congressman Jeff Fortenberry.
Jeff Fortenberry would be another, exactly.
Yeah. Right. So I mean, there is this generation that's moving up, and hopefully the wheel will turn within the next 10 years, and they will be able to have their place, and we will rise up more, which we are called to do in Catholic social teaching, as I have learned. We are to be a part of democracy by lifting up those leaders who can implement democracy the way it should be.
Well, there's nothing more important in the next month than for people to focus on that. Yeah. There's an enormous amount riding on the outcome of November 4th. I understand that some conservatives have some concerns about Senator McCain. What they ought to be focusing on, in my view, is the absolute certainty that an Obama administration would set us back 35 years in legal protection for the unborn in its first week. Mm-hmm. In its first week. Cardinal Regali, the chairman of the Bishop's Pro-Life Committee, put out another fine statement on the so-called FOCA, the Freedom of Choice Act, which would, by federal law, attempt to wipe out all state-based protections for the unborn, including partial birth abortion bans, parental notification for minors, informed consent, regulation of the abortion industry. And Senator Obama has said this will be a priority issue of his legislative agenda, and that he will do what he can to implement that by executive order anyway. So we're not making this stuff up. We know what is going to happen on January 21st if he is the president. He has said he will roll back everything that he can by executive order and will pursue a very dramatic pro-abortion legislative policy. The emergence in this campaign of Catholic apologists for this, primarily Professor Douglas Kamik, but also Professor Kathy Caveney, has been truly appalling and is something that's going to have to be argued very, very seriously in Catholic intellectual circles when things are settled after November. The attempt to take this social doctrine and turn it inside out so that it becomes an excuse to support the most radically pro-abortion candidate in the history of presidential elections is unconscionable. It's also stupid beyond belief.
Right.
Stupid beyond belief. And this needs to be addressed.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we're thankful that we have at least someone has articulated so clearly the basis of Catholic social teaching. And I encourage everyone out there to get a copy of Against the Grain. It's I know they have it in their local Catholic bookstores, but also online. And we also thank you for your contributions to our diocesan papers, not only the Catholic Voice in Omaha, but the Southern Nebraska Register in the Lincoln Diocese as well. So
good. Thank you.
Yeah. Had George Weigel with us here in studio today. Again, the book, Against the Grain, Christianity and Democracy, War and Peace. George, again, a real pleasure to have you with us. We look forward to each and every visit that we have. Thank you for being so generous with your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.